You're listening to The Sound Atlas by Russell Brooks.
Okay, I am sitting here with Marty Clark. How you doing, man?
Fantastic.
You look great.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Start where I start with everybody. Where were you born?
My parents tell me I was born in Bowling Green, Kentucky. But I grew up in Morgantown, Kentucky.
Okay.
As did you.
Yes, yes.
So, I was birthed in a hospital in Bowling Green.
Right.
To be specific about
you
that.
You were birthed at the medical center, more than likely, and then from
yes,
then on
Yes, medical
out,
center. I don't know that Greenview existed at that time in 1981. It may have.
I don't know either.
I'm
pretty sure I was at the medical center.
On that, but yes.
All right.
Bowling Green, yep. Born there, grew up in Morgantown.
So does any of your family play music? Or were they playing music when you were a kid, basically? Or anybody a musician? Or
when I was a kid, I don't remember my brother playing much, but I think he may have dabbled a little bit. When I was younger, much younger, but now when... I guess he was playing drums by the time I was probably around 10 or so, somewhere around there.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
Trying to remember
right.
exactly when that was.
At the house, mom or dad playing music or?
My mom was the big music buff of the family. So she, I'm sure you can remember, she had all these old records and cassette tapes and. I can fondly remember times when she was cooking dinner and be playing CCR records.
Right.
You know, in the background, or Elvis records. My mom's a huge Elvis fan.
Right.
As you know.
I do.
So, yeah, those are fond memories of that. So, I think that's maybe where I had gotten my, you know, just love of music.
So when was the first time that you decided you wanted to play music?
Well, like I said, around the time I was about 10 or so, I can remember my brother had been playing drums, and he was playing drums in a band in Bowling Green. I believe that band's name was Karma, and they were playing at some places that no longer exist here in town.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the specific names. He would be able to help me out with that, but he kind of had a point where he was maybe not playing as much and was willing to sell me his drum kit at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 12, I think. I know you'll lead into where we're going to probably go with this, but it was around, I guess it was about 11 or 12 when he had a drum kit that he was willing to sell, and I think he was interested in playing bass at that point.
Mm-hmm. What kind of drum kit was it?
That was a CB percussion
okay.
kit. So it was a five-piece kit, CB percussion. It was basically the equivalent of, at that time, it was a cheap Pearl Export kit. So, I got the kit from him and just started banging around on it, set it up in the attic of the house I grew up in Morgantown on Brownsville Road. And that was the beginnings. And I think if you're asking like what music I was listening to that made me want to start playing.
Yeah. Like who would have been. Well, when you first start playing drums, who are you wanting to? What band are you wanting to play? Drummer or you know?
At that time, I was like I considered myself the biggest Metallica fan on the planet. So
right.
I loved Metallica. Once I heard when my brother had introduced me to Master of Puppets, when I listened to that record and I heard Welcome Home Sanitarium and Master of Puppets. To name a couple on that
so this
album.
Is basically all Jeff's fault.
Yeah, it was Jeff's fault that I got into it. You know, as I was growing a little bit older, and growing into realizing that I could, you know, potentially be a drummer like all these people that I was idolizing. That's what really pursued me to keep going. And then,
right,
you know, I sucked badly. I think the first song that I ever learned to play all the way through was Enter Sandman, but that was probably because I'd listened to it like 50 times a day for a couple of years.
Right.
And just kind of learned. In those days, you just had to play from memory. You didn't have, or I didn't have, speakers that I could set up and play along with at the time, or,
right,
you know, or headphones I could put in and, yeah, play along with.
So you're just playing the song back in your head and just playing
terribly. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, doing it.
Were you,
yeah,
in a marching, were you in band as well at school?
I was in band. I was never in marching band.
Okay.
Just wasn't my thing.
Right.
You know, no discount to any marching band people.
Sure.
It just, it
march on, march on.
Yes, it wasn't, it just wasn't my thing. But I was in pep band.
Okay.
And then I was in concert band maybe a couple years.
Actually, I remember you being in pep band now that I think about it.
Yeah. So Brad Annis sort of passed the torch to me when he graduated in 96. Excuse me. And I took over his role for 97, 98, and 99 in pep band. So, yeah, I was in band. What was your question again?
Well, we started out the first... Well, I mean, you may have just answered it, but when was the first time you played music in front of people?
Okay, well, I guess that would be have to be the true answer to that would be at a,
pep,
you know,
band
a
or something.
Butler County High School basketball game.
Right, and what kind of songs are you playing? I know you're playing like the Go Big Blue.
Oh, man. We were playing the finest.
Let's hear it. What
we
songs?
Played, We Got the Beat was the go-to.
We've Got the Beat.
We've Got the Beat? Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
We Got the Beat.
I don't know that song. I don't think I do. How's that song go?
We got the Beat. It's the Go-Go's.
I bet I know if I heard it. Who was the director?
The director was Bryant McClellan.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Good dude. I think we're friends on Facebook. Maybe he'll see this when I share it. You're a great director, Bryant McClellan. He always wanted me to speed up a little bit, though. I was a little too relaxed. It's like, this is pep band. Come on. Come on.
You didn't have
come
enough,
on, pick it up.
Not quite enough pep for a pep band.
Maybe some days. Or some evenings.
So what's the first band that you're in outside of school?
That band was Maria's Injection.
Right.
And
now, Maria's Injection, how old are you when this starts? And spoiler alert, I'm in a bunch of Marty's first bands. So, but how old were you at the time?
I was 15, I believe.
Okay.
I think I was 15.
All right.
Pretty sure.
And who were the founding members of Maria's Injection?
Founding members of that band were the two people that are talking on this podcast. That would be myself, Marty Clark, and Russell Brooks.
And who else was in the band?
That was Jason McKee, Ryan Doty, and that was it, right? Just us?
And what kind of music would you say that was?
Oh, I don't know. Heavily influenced by what we were... You know, listen to it at the time, I think.
What would that have been when you were 15?
15. Oh, man. So many. Bush was big.
Right.
It was huge for all of us.
Yep.
Soundgarden for me. I think there was some Nirvana influence in there and some, you know, just we were definitely listening to it anyway.
Yeah.
That, Alice in Chains. Pearl Jam.
Just 90s grunge kind
90s of. 90s grunge, hard rock. I know I'm forgetting some things, but...
Well, let me ask you this. Did Maria's Injection in your memory, did ever play out much or just more...
We played a shitload in my house on Brownsville Road. sometimes to some people that wanted to come check
sometimes
it out.
Sometimes some people would show up, sure.
I believe we even set up on the porch one time, perhaps.
Yeah, you got
carport. I know that the first show I can remember us playing was at a party.
Mm-hmm.
I remember where it was, but I don't remember whose party it was.
Okay.
But that was maybe our biggest crowd to date at that time.
Right.
It was like 7 people.
Sure.
They fucking loved it. Roof off that goddamn garage.
We did. What was your next band?
Next band was Riddlin'.
Okay. That was also in Riddlin'. Yes,
spoiler alert.
And you should know the other people that were in Riddlin'.
There was 3 of us.
Who was the other person?
That was Timmy Phelps.
Timmy Phelps, yes, sir. Played the bass.
Yeah, he was a very sexy bass player.
He was.
Still is, I presume. I haven't seen him play
bass. If he touches a bass, he will be. That's all I know.
He's sexy. I know that.
Yeah, he hadn't lost that.
Yeah. That was cool. That was maybe it was sort of forming at the same time, if you would agree, as Maria's Injection, because Timmy was hanging around with us, and
yeah,
he was starting to learn how to play bass, from what I can recall.
Yeah.
And we're like, we need to fucking do something with Tim, mm-hmm. and like maybe take it up. We were thinking, like, let's just play some slamming shit, as opposed to, like, you know, we were kind of playing just kind of grungy sound and stuff.
Right.
And Riddlin' took it to the next level where we were fucking just beating the shit. I mean,
it's just drop D, chug, 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 yeah. chug, scream. Yeah.
Yeah. Just drop D. You're going to fucking burn some fucking houses down a fucking neighborhood. Maybe take down some helicopters while we're at it. I don't fucking, you know.
Yeah.
That was heavy, and that was cool. Cool groove.
So what's the next band after that?
Okay, so musically, after Riddlin', it was quite a hiatus for me from music as far as playing with a full band. As far as I can remember, the first full band that I played with, which I did play with some guys, and I don't want to leave people out. I played with, like, my friend Kelly Parker. We did some stuff at his place on Kenton Street, and another guy, I can't remember his name, but I think it was Joey or something. But he played guitar. We had the cops called there a few times, but
sure.
Kelly was playing, and we jammed out on some stuff. We were playing some Tonic tunes, and
Tonic. Is that If You Could Only See the Way She Loves Me?
Yep, we Tonic. Were playing okay. that. I'm forgetting like another. Oh yeah, we did some Gin Blossoms.
Yeah,
at that mm-hmm. time. Hey Jealousy. Yeah. That's a great fucking tune.
Great tune.
So yeah, I jammed with a few people here and there, and then right after that, I hooked up with Aaron Scruggs, Kyle Kirby, and Ryan Snowden, and we started Inertia.
Okay.
And that was around 2002, maybe.
What kind of music was Inertia?
It was a product of our influences, and at that time, we were all really into Incubus.
Mm-hmm.
Really into Incubus. There was a lot of Nirvana influence. We covered some Nirvana songs. That was a fun band. It was a great time. We played a lot of shows. You and I were talking about State Street Pub that
right.
we jammed out there. In the what was it called, the smaller side of it?
I just always called it
Ellis Place.
Bar Ellis, side and Ellis Place. Yeah.
So Ellis Place was like the big stage. We played on the State Street Pub stage and just killed it there one night. And we played Ted Balls a bunch. And that went on. We played together for a couple of years, I think.
Did you guys put any albums out or anything?
We recorded some stuff, but we only recorded about 3 songs, and it was just a local guy. His name's Crawl. He was known by Crawl. I don't remember what his full name is.
His name's Carl.
Carl. Yeah. I don't know his last name.
I want to say his last name's Molden. Carl Malden.
Carl Malden, we'll go with. We recorded his house.
I may
house.
Not be right about that, but I'm pretty sure I am.
We recorded a rough demo there at his mm-hmm. place, but that was as far as we got as far as recording with that band. It's a fun band. I thought we had a lot of really good originals. It was fun. Right. We hit the, you know, it's time when I was in college and we played Tidballs a lot and it was fun.
Right.
I feel like we had a pretty decent following and
right.
at that time, a little extra cash for all us guys was fun. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, but it was a lot of fun. We played some good tunes. We covered some Red Hot Chili Peppers. We covered Rage Against the Machine was like a right. big hit. Like we would play Killing in the Name at the end of every set, and that just blows the fucking roof off of any place you play. It's like right. fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Yeah.
You
know,
so I mean, right. anytime you play that song, you're sure fire.
You're doing all right.
Fucking band in yeah. Bowling Green.
Yeah. So after that, what do you do?
I played with a group called Soul Side Out.
Who's in Soul Side Out?
Soul Side Out, that was Patrick Lampton on guitar, Troy Mercer was vocals, and Matt Rich on bass. So I'd been out of inertia. We just hadn't played for a while, and I saw Patrick and Matt playing an open mic night at Tidballs on a Monday night. I don't know if they still do open mic nights. Some
they
Mondays.
Do, I think, yeah.
So anyway, I was like, hey, I'm really digging what you guys are putting together here. Let's get together sometime and, see what we can put together. And we started jamming and it just really kind of meshed with what we were all, trying to do and our influences. And, Patrick and I really saw eye to eye on, Alice in Chains primarily and kind of that groove. So we were looking for like a heavy kind of drop D, just cranking it out, just heavy melodic groove stuff. And I was, you know, still heavily influenced at that point with Soundgarden and what Matt Cameron does and that kind of sound. I'm nowhere fucking near as good as that guy. And I'll never be as good as him or the drummer for Alice in Chains, Sean Kinney. But those were certainly people I idolized and wanted to try to have a band that sounded similar to that, that kind of had a bluesy feel, but yet really kick your ass.
Still heavy,
you know,
yeah.
Punch you in the mouth kind of sound.
Did you guys put anything out, Soul Side Out?
We never put out an album, per se. Okay. But we did record a 3-track demo at Omni Sound Studios.
I thought you were going to say some dude named Crawl again.
There was this Crawl came back in the
mystical Crawl. He just records bands and he never puts them out.
No, Crawl had nothing to do with this one.
Okay, I'm sorry. Omni Studios. And
no
what is that?
Offense to you, Crawl, if you're listening.
Yeah.
But yeah, Omni Sound Studios. Tons of good records have been produced out of that place. I can't.
Where's it at?
It's in Nashville.
Oh, okay. Do you still have those? Are they available
yeah.
online? Or
I do have them. They may be available on a site called MySpace.
That, right.
If you can remember your password, you can probably look it up and go to Soul Side Out's page on there.
Sadly, quick note, MySpace, I've often went on there and tried to look for old stuff I have, and it'll show up there, but you can't play it. You can click play. It never plays. That's my experience, but maybe Soul Side Out stuff always plays.
Well, then, you know, if that doesn't work for you, you can send me an email or reach out to me on Facebook or you know, shoot me a DM on Twitter, and I can see about getting you that demo. We have some other stuff. We I'll give that Soul Side Out demo. We actually recorded at another studio. excuse me. This guy we recorded with, his name is Ryan. He had an in-home studio. We recorded some good tracks there, but a lot of that stuff's just rough. Never mastered. The only stuff that we had that was somewhat mastered was what we did in Omni, and that was like a 12-hour day there where we just played three songs, did the best we could to cut the tracks, edit the tracks, and like quick master them. But it's all rough, but it was a good band. I feel like we had a pretty decent following at the time. We played a lot of shows with Vile Jive, and they were just killing it at that time. So those were huge crowds, a lot of great people. It was just a really fun time. And I don't know that we ever played a show with Cheap Fireworks. I think that was Cheap Fireworks was before. Cheap Fireworks is one of Russell's old bands.
Sure.
For those of you all that don't know that, subscribe to his podcast.
I'm not sure if we did or not. You know, what do you do after that?
What do I do after that? College was over. I had to go out and I was working full time in college anyway. But I just had to go to work, man. You got to make a living. And I just finished my degree from Western and went on to, once I finished my degree.
This is after Uncle Sam's closed and you couldn't dance anymore?
Yes. Okay. Sad days. Sad fucking days. Yeah. So that part of my career ended. Moved on to, I worked for Aramark on campus at that time, all through my college career, and took a job in Toledo, Ohio. Worked there at that University of Toledo for a year. And Toledo, Ohio, for those of you who have never visited Toledo, Ohio, Don't go to Toledo,
Ohio. It sounds inherently Canadian. Should be Toledo, Canada. It just sounds Canadian to me. I don't know why.
It felt like it. And okay. It was cold as fuck. it was right off Lake Erie. So you had that lake effect. And it was just, it was bullshit from day one. Worked there for a year. Got the fuck out of there. Okay, and
let me stop. Let me stop you.
I played at a couple of bars, set in as a drummer while I was there.
Oh,
though.
In Toledo.
Yeah, never played with a band. Actually, let me take that back. I did play with a guy, a friend of mine. His name's Christopher. He worked at the university as well. He was a chef. Uh-huh. Fucking great bass player. Really cool guy. And he and I played with another cat. I can't remember his name, but we sort of were forming a band at the time when I left. Toledo. Right. So, but it was a cool groove, and there was one good thing I'll tell you about Toledo was he had some friends that that were in Bowling Green, Ohio, Bowling Green, Ohio has a fucking kick-ass music scene. It's kind of like a Bowling Green, Kentucky, but bigger, and they have some really kick-ass venues, bigger venues than what we have here.
Right.
That local bands play at. We're talking like fucking putting the Brewing Company stage when it was at its finest to shame. Like, this is a real fucking deal stage.
Right.
Leveled up, you know. It was kick-ass, and we saw a band called Achilles Green there that was kind of like a punk bluegrass band, and we saw there was a band that opened up for them one time when we were there that was this old school fucking punk band from Detroit, because Detroit was like half hour away.
Oh, okay.
45 minutes away. So there was some cool shit coming that way into Bowling Green, Ohio, and I suspect they still have that going on. But that was neat. And the stuff that I was playing with that guy, with Christopher and the other cat was much different than any kind of other shit that I've ever played, because Christopher was like, he'd played in punk bands, and I brought just like heavy hitting drums to the table. And Christopher was kind of like this punk bass player, but this other guy we had was playing acoustic, so it was weird kind of stuff we were playing. It was like kind of like a heavy, jammy fucking, I don't know. It was hard to fucking describe. You'd have to have been there in Toledo, and you would not have wanted to be there.
We've already learned you don't want to go, so
yeah. So that's what happened there, and then come back to Bowling Green and. You know, just work has kind of taken over,
right?
In the last,
well, let me ask you this: as far as even we've already talked about, like who influenced you growing up, drum wise, but I mean, you know, in an overall sense, band wise, who's the best band of all time?
It's tough. I mean, obviously, I mentioned Metallica earlier. I love those guys. I've seen them 6 times, I believe.
Really? Okay.
Seen them a bunch, and they're great. I mean, they've been killing it with what they do for
years and years and years and years and years.
40 years, right. So they're great. But I think that we suffered our biggest loss to music when Chris Cornell died, because that was my favorite musician all around of all time. I put him up there. Like in early, like when I really got into Zeppelin, I fucking loved Robert Plant. I was like, God, this guy's just the best. But then you listen to Soundgarden, Bad Motorfinger, and I'm like, this fucking guy's killing what Robert Plant did.
Right. Yeah.
Just killing it. And then, you know, that was a great album. And then they did Super Unknown, which is just start to finish. Just a masterpiece, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And just fucking love Chris Cornell. Love him. And then, you know, the Down on the Upside. And I even loved the very last record that they put out. Kingdom Animal. Is that right?
I'm actually not sure. That sounds correct.
Did you listen to that record?
2 songs.
Oh, Jesus. Listen to the whole thing. It's fucking great.
Right.
It's so good. It's so good. Cornell, he had lost some of his range.
Yeah, I can't sing as high. That just happens, yeah.
But it's just age. Phenomenal. But I want to back up. In between there, so Down on the Upside, you were a big fan of that album.
Yes.
I remember that. And I know that in a band you were playing in, you guys played... what's the name of that fucking song?
Played Ty Cobb.
Ty Cobb, yeah. Killer song, real upbeat tune. If you guys don't know that song, check out
Ty Cobb by Soundgarden off of the second one, third one, technically.
Well, there were more before, but big albums.
Big ones, third one.
Yeah, that was the third big album. After Down on the Upside, he did a solo album in 2000.
Euphoria Morning
yes, is sir. A absolutely fucking incredible album.
I
if
agree.
You have not heard it, listen to it from start to finish. I was lucky enough to see him at a place called 328 Performance Hall, and that was in 2000. It was in the winter of 2000, I believe. And that, if you ever got to go to that venue, it was just extraordinary. It was standing room only. And I actually met Cornell outside of that venue after, and actually talked to his band. And that band he had touring with him was a band called 11 out of Seattle. And somehow accidentally kept the Sharpie that I had the bass player sign my ticket. And this guy was German. And I've still got this Sharpie somewhere. It's like a German Sharpie.
Oh, nice.
Sorry, bass player from 11 for stealing your Sharpie back in 2000.
He's still real sore about that. Chances are.
He's like, I fucking hurt. He's waiting to hear this fucking podcast.
I can't do a German
accent.
That's
that motherfucker that took my Sharpie that night.
Honey, get in here.
Nashville. Oh, Marty Clark, you're going fucking down, son.
For years now.
I've been looking for you forever. Yeah. But I don't know. I could talk to you about Chris Cornell.
Let me say this though.
Well,
go ahead.
Before Soundgarden, and one of the albums that honestly, and let me go back to answer Soul Side Out influences a little bit more. A band that came out, an album of a band that formed before Pearl Jam got big or Soundgarden got big was Temple of the Dog. And if you haven't listened to that record in its entirety and celebrated it, you're doing yourself a major
disservice. The song you would have heard would have been Hunger Strike.
Hunger Strike would have been the one you saw the video for, and you were like, who's that fucking long-haired dude that's not Cornell in that cornfield? And that was Eddie Vedder, and that was his first appearance on a record. That was before 10 came out. And what shirt am I wearing right now, Russell Brooks?
Pearl Jam.
Specifically,
Alive.
The Alive guy. So,
yes, sir.
Just that album, fuck, from start to finish, is just so good.
It's good.
Call Me a Dog, I think, may have been something that Patrick and I touched on right away. That I was like, if we can jam on that,
if you like that,
we can see eye to eye. We're gonna really kill it.
Now, I ask this of everybody, but why do you play music?
Oh,
what does it do for you?
What does it do for me?
Yeah,
it's just I mean, if you're able to hold the tune or be able to put something together, even when I sucked, I didn't quit, you know?
Right.
It's like, I want to fuck. You listen to these things and it means so much to your life and your heart and your soul. It's like you just got to persevere and at least try to, you know, be able to do some of the things that you've idolized so much. But for me, it's just like it's not just a physical, you know, release, but it is, but yeah. It's such an emotional way to express yourself. And, you know, for me as a drummer, but I've been known to do karaoke singing quite a bit.
Right.
So I'm a self proclaimed fantastic singer. I'm not going to do a lot of that right now.
Sure.
I mean, we can maybe do a little sample, but I prefer to have a little music playing in the background.
Sure.
To go along with.
Yeah.
It's just, for me, it's just very spiritual.
Would you have done different knowing what you know now? If you could go back to when you first started, would you have any advice like listen to this or try to do this thing better, or any advice to young Marty?
I would say focus more on your skill and making it better, and you've got to put in more time. For me, it's hard because I couldn't be a starving artist. I had to make a living.
Right.
If I could go to young Marty and say, hey, every single second you have that you can, you know, be practicing or working on some rudiments or, you know, trying to just not fuck around, then do that, you know, because, and maybe even going back to Butler County High School, if I had focused more and not just like, oh, I don't need to read that fucking sheet music. I don't want to be in fucking marching band.
Right.
I just want to play pep band. I can rock this crowd if we get the beat, son. then if I'd done that, then I'd probably be a better drummer. And hell, I may have ended up playing with some touring band.
Somebody better than me.
I may have been playing with, playing drums for Travis Tritt at this point, which has been an ultimate goal of mine.
Tis to be devoutly wished to be country, the drummer
can
for
I say
Travis Tritt.
And I'm not making light of country drummers because those fuckers are badass. Mm. Country drummers are, it's very technical shit.
Mm.
I mean, if you're a any studio musician though in Nashville, they're fucking tight. And I'm not that good. Just quite honestly, I want to play in a band that's gonna have 100 people at a bar.
Yeah,
I'd love to play in that kind of band again. Yeah. Just simply don't have a lot of time to do it right now. But I loved the fuck out of it when I did.
Right,
and it was great. And if there was another opportunity that worked, like if you and I could put something together that would work around our schedules.
Play once every 4 years.
Once every 4 years, we'll fucking just kill it. Tim Phelps is gonna be in the lineup. Timmy.
Timmy. Yeah.
Timmy.
Yeah.
Okay. My bad.
Timmy.
I forgot to mention somebody earlier. I wanted to just throw it out. Nathan Woolen. He wasn't technically ever a member of Maria's Injection,
but he did do some practicing.
He played with us. We auditioned with him a little bit. We played some basketball. Russell and I are fucking badass basketball players, in case none of you know it. Still are.
Oh, we're amazing. We're amazing.
We were playing a little bit down the street earlier. and
every Wednesday, usually. We'll get together and have a dunk contest.
We still got fucking hops. I'm wearing Doc Martens. He's got Air Jordans.
I make them raise the basket. A lot of people now, when you get older, get the baskets that lower.
Yeah, bring that shit to 8 foot. No, son. We're going to take that fucking shit up to 12 foot.
I'm talking 15. I'm talking 16. We're fucking
pussies.
Yeah. But anyway, we play music too, but... thank you very much, sir.
Fucking thank you, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marty Clark, one of the people that I first got into music with, and he's a from the heart, great person. Martin,
I love you,
Clark.
Brother.
Bye.